When a hockey team finds that the score is all tied up and the clock is reading about 2 minutes left in the final period, the coach calls for a timeout. He wants to give the players a breather, and he wants to give them a new plan to try for a goal in those final minutes. A mere 30 seconds pause goes a long way when all your focus is on that one new play. Wouldn't it be nice if we could call for a timeout in our personal lives? A breather from all the work commitments and appointments and hockey games and practices and meetings and more would be more than just nice. It's called a Sabbath. Traditionally, that was Sunday or Saturday if you were Jewish. It was traditionally truly a time of rest. It goes back at least as far as the time of the Exodus from Egypt, when the Hebrews were wandering in the wilderness and Moses gave them those 10 rules to live by. My mother-in-law told stories of not even being able to play on Sunday. Sabbath has gone into the sunset for most of us, along with the horse as a common means of transportation. It seems a bit quaint now, doesn't it? This idea of taking a whole day off from everything, including shopping and sports, as well as work, but not always Sunday dinner. Well, I play hockey on Sundays, and nothing else stops either these days. The book I'm reading currently for Seattle University's Pastoral Leadership Program talks about the gifts of Sabbath, a time for God as well as yourself, a time for balance, a time for letting go of the busyness and just being present for each other. Of course, one would have to really use this gift of Sabbath to make it more than mere time off. Like in the hockey metaphor I've been alluding to, one has to focus on the game at hand, life in this case. Sounds good, doesn't it? It seems a predictable admonition, though. Take time off for yourself. I wasn't sure I wanted to preach like that. I'm not sure how many of us are even interested in making such a commitment to ourselves. Certainly, I can hear voices saying, sure, it would be nice, but it's just not possible. The rest of the world doesn't do it, so neither can I. It even seemed a little too predictable to suggest, well, lighten your load a little, even one day a week. We'd do these things if it were possible, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we? Well, life happened to me this month. Many of you know that my father's cancer has recurred and that he's pretty ill at the moment. He had surgery this week to bypass his bowel obstruction, and we were all so very hopeful that the colostomy would relieve the pain. We're not sure that it has, and of course, we don't know how much time he has left. It feels like less and less all the time. I've been in Pennsylvania all this week visiting him in the hospital. He and his wife now live mere moments from the hospital, so it was easy to go back and forth in addition to chatting with him on the phone as well. That is, around the pain and the discomfort of his surgery and the continuing pain and nausea. All this, especially with too much time on my hands in airports and on airplanes, has got me to reflecting on the role my father has played in my life, as well as that of my mother, who died in 1979 at the age of 54. I'm older than that now. It's been a time out of a different kind for me. When she died in 1979, Al and I were living in Alberta on a shoestring budget. We had just moved into our log house in the country, a truly unfinished cabin with a septic system but no running water. No furnace for the first 3 weeks either, and it was a cold October. No windows, but we were living in the basement anyway. It was more than a bit like camping all the time. I don't know whether I wasn't paying attention or was just too young to understand, but for the longest time, I didn't really get how sick my mother was. In September, she and my father came for a visit, and we all started up the trail on Castle Mountain in Banff National Park. Mom and I only went a little ways, as she wasn't able to go too far. Al and Dad went as far as the ramparts, where they hoped to see the whole Bow River Valley. They made it down just before the fog got too thick to see their feet. Even after that, I didn't notice for a long time just how those usual long conversations changed into conversations with Mom for a little while and then Dad, and the part with Dad got longer and longer. And phoning long distance then was quite expensive, and I didn't phone too often. I was busy taking a course in millwork and carpentry in Edmonton, living with my in-laws, and trying to do just a little work on the house to make it more habitable. Things like insulation in the basement walls with vapor barrier over it. We lived with those pink walls for quite a few years. Just after Easter, whenever it was that year, I finished my program and found a job in a kitchen cabinet shop staining doors. I was delighted to be doing what I'd been training for. That's when I woke up to how sick my mother was. A new friend at the cabinet shop convinced me that I really needed to go visit her. So I took the train to Toronto, and that was quite an expedition, which I won't go into. I spent 10 days with her. I arrived home on her birthday, May 10th. When I said goodbye to her, I knew it would be for the last time. She died in July. And now I've made another visit in May to visit my dying father. This prompted me to reflect on the role that parents play in their lives and the very identity of their children. Well, me anyway. It's been a forced timeout, you know, like for a TV commercial. I used to think that I was a clone of my mother. Perfectionist, capable, high expectations of others as well as myself, a bit bossy, pretty organized. Physically, we are very similar. Same height, same size shoes, same weight problem, same interest in gardening. About a year ago, though, my brother observed that he saw me becoming more like my father. Well, this surprised me. I tried to figure out what he meant. My father is a gregarious person. He loves to talk to anybody that will give him the time of day. And since he has lived in the same county and mostly the same township all of his 82 years, he knows a lot of people. He can't go anywhere without seeing someone he knows, or at least knows who they are. Often he can tell me who they are related to and how he met them and how they are related to him. He's an easygoing person, going with the flow rather than bucking it. He doesn't seem to need to be right. He values relationships, especially with his family and his community, above everything else. He is a man of honesty and integrity, a whole person, ready to go whenever it's time. Well, actually, when he's uncomfortable or in pain, he wants to go now. He wants to go home, and that's how he put it. And that's why I asked the band to play I'll Fly Away. It's a song I've been singing to myself these days to honor him. My question about the role parents play in our identity morphed into, well, who am I? How do I know when I'm copying whichever of my parents? And who is the real me? This is a question of authenticity, of integrity. It's much more than taking time out for a breather before re-entering the game again. I've been forced into a reflection on where is my wholeness? Who is the real Katie? Surely I am more than a mere copy of either of my parents. At what age does a person become an individual anyway? I sort of thought it was younger than 55. I had not expected this kind of timeout. Author and educator Parker Palmer writes about rediscovering one's true self or soul in his book, A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Toward an Undivided Life. He believes that as children, we know who we are, really, inside. But as we grow older, for various reasons, we come to hide this true self, often from ourselves as well as the outer world. Maybe we put on a charming and extroverted face to be more popular at school. Maybe we take up a course of study that our parents want for us rather than the one we don't know what is yet. or the contrary, the one we sense will enrage or disappoint our parents, just to be me. Sometimes we have to do this for mere survival. Our culture tells us that we need to put on a face. The social norm, for instance, in North America seems to be extroverted, outgoing, engaging. If you are not that way, you have to learn how to play that role, if you want to be successful, especially. Sometimes we end up working at jobs that do not match our values, or things happen there that do not seem right to us. Do you go along with it, or try to buck the system? There can be a price to be paid, and we know that. It's hard to do. Whatever the reason we try to be what we are not, whatever the result, we can feel, somehow sense, that things aren't really right and true to us. We feel inauthentic, fraudulent, maybe even invisible. And try maintaining a relationship, especially an intimate one, with someone who's not always the same person. It's tough, really difficult if you're not the same on the outside as you are on the inside. If I know that I am different on the inside than I'm on the outside, then others would be too, wouldn't they? How do I know who they are, really? Can I trust them? One can become very wary and even cynical if the onstage presence doesn't match the backstage reality. I'm wondering if this resonates with me so much right now because I see my father as someone who has managed, in many ways anyway, to live that kind of integrity, and I wonder if I can do something like the same. Certainly, finding the job that your life needs to match you in some way, at least if you are above the survival level of work. I wonder if I could work at a munitions factory or for a company that manufactures war machines. I doubt it. But what if the business I worked for, though, treated its employees less than fairly? What if the product they sold didn't work? What if the company left behind an ecological mess? Would I have the courage to work for the betterment of society, or even just move on to another job? Palmer feels that it is almost impossible to find your real, true self by yourself. A supportive and affirming community is necessary, what he calls a circle of trust. It's much more than a church community like this gathering here. Other kinds of gatherings and spaces allow us to think intellectually, says universities, or small groups like our humanist group, or to express our emotions, as in therapy groups. Task forces and committees help us organize ourselves and work toward a common goal. These are all valid kinds of groups. But where do we discern and develop our soul? What is this soul? Thomas Merton calls it true self. The Quakers call it the inner teacher or inner light. Humanists might label it identity or integrity. How do we discover and develop this? The focus of my time at my father's house this week was being with my father, merely being with him, sitting with him through his pain and nausea, when he didn't want to be left alone, that is, hearing his stories, listening to his speculations about what will happen when he dies, his wishes for himself, which are pretty minimal, his hopes for his children. I was there merely to accompany him through this time. It's this kind of attentiveness that we need to form our souls, not well-meaning or misguided assistance, as in, why don't you do it this way, but mere presence. We need the freedom to live our own lives while this circle protects and borders and salutes us. Palmer says, a circle of trust consists of relationships that are neither invasive nor evasive. We are not there to fix anyone or be their therapist, merely to support others in going where the other needs to go, to walk with them in their journey. Some of us have such relationships already. whether with our life partners or someone else we know that we are in a circle of trust with. Mary Oliver writes, "This is the first, wildest, and wisest thing I know, that the soul exists and that it is built entirely out of attentiveness." And in the manner of our spirit play stories, I wonder what my life would be like if I had more moments of absolute attentiveness, whether named Sabbath or time out or something else. If my real self, my integrity and wholeness, would come out to play more often. I wonder what your life would be if you had such time outs. Amen.